her new novel, Breaking Wild. That's coming up right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the 26th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from February 5th through March 5th. Most of the films will screen at Portland Community College Cascade Campus, and two films will show at the Hollywood Theater. The five-week-long festival of feature and documentary films come from all over the African continent and include Thursday evening documentary screenings, Family Film Day, and Women Filmmakers Week, held during the first week of March in celebration of Women's History Month. Again, that's 26th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films, playing Thursday through Saturday until March 5th. Most of the films will screen at Portland Community College Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street, in the Arts and Humanities Building in Room 104. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is Kathleen Stevenson for Between the Covers. My guest is writer Diane Lebeck, whose new book is called Breaking Wild. It follows two strong women characters. One of them is Amy Ray, who is lost in the Colorado wilderness, and the other woman is Prue, who is trying to find her. The book has the feel of a thriller or mystery as the reader waits to find out whether Amy Ray will be found. It's also about the complicated lives of these two women. Diane Lebeck is the author of three well-received young adult novels. She is a professor of English and a faculty member of the Master of Fine Arts program in fiction and nonfiction at Southern New Hampshire University, where she was the program director for over 3 years. In addition to teaching creative writing, she has worked as a medical journalist, an archaeology assistant, a marketing writer, a sand and gravel dispatcher, a lifeguard, a motivational speaker, and a music teacher. She's an avid outdoors woman, and she lived in a small ranching town in northwestern Colorado for almost 14 years before moving to New Hampshire. Diane Lebeck, welcome to KBOO. Thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you so much, Kathleen.
As I mentioned in the introduction, this novel follows two strong women, Amy Ray, who becomes lost while bow hunting in the woods of Colorado, and Prue, who works for the Bureau of Land Management. In Breaking Wild, you alternate the stories of the two women as one becomes lost and the other becomes involved in trying to find her. What was the germ of this novel? How did it start for you?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think first and foremost was in living there, I knew that I wanted to write a novel that took place in this just fascinating and beautiful terrain. It's not the typical Rocky Mountains or ski town. I mean, this is real, true Western Colorado working life. There's high desert, there's beautiful mountains, there's a beautiful river. Like, so I knew I wanted to use that land. And I also thought when I would be out hiking in the land or bouldering or whatever, I thought, you know, the landscape works as an incredible metaphor for our interior lives. So that's how it started. But then the story came to me one night when I was bow hunting by myself. I was bugling back and forth with an elk, and it got too late, and I knew I couldn't take a shot. So I let it go, and I reached into my backpack for my headlamp, but the headlamp wouldn't come on, so it had either burned out or the batteries were dead. And it was terrifying because there was a lot of cloud cover that night. It started to drizzle, and I'd wandered probably 2 miles away from my vehicle into just complete backcountry, away from any civilization. There were no lights from a town or anything like that. I think in that feeling of getting lost, once I finally did get back to my truck, which was sometime in the middle of the night, and I was driving home, I thought about what being lost means. And at that time, I felt very lost in my own life emotionally because I had moved to this area of the country thinking I would get to stay there forever. And I knew I was going to have to leave. I had 3 sons I was responsible for, and I knew I was going to have to leave to take a job to support them. And that's eventually what led me to New Hampshire, taking the job at Southern New Hampshire University. So it was a really difficult time in my life. I've told people when I left that area, I literally cried all the way to the other side of Kansas, and that is the truth. I could not stop the tears from coming down my face. I now love New Hampshire. But you know, in playing off that idea of being lost, I thought, let's think about a female character. Let's think about a woman bow hunting. Let's think about a woman who goes lost in the wilderness. But let's think about a woman who in some way is lost in her own life. And that's really what drove the writing for me, was that emotional story.
Yeah, she's a very interesting character, and you reveal bits of her background and why perhaps she is what she is as you're reading the novel. Tell me a little bit more, tell our listeners a little bit more about what she's struggling with in general.
Yeah, she's got a lot of demons from her past. She is very complicated, and she's also very private and very much a survival woman. She has a tough shell on her exterior, so no one really knows Amy Ray. And I think, you know, part of that, where that came from for me, was I was married to a man I'd met in New Hampshire for 2 years, and he also had a very complicated past and was a very complicated man. I loved him dearly. He was a beautiful human being. And I developed a great deal of compassion for him and a great deal of respect for him. And I tried to help him understand and come to terms with those problems from his past before he died. He ended up getting diagnosed with glioblastoma, which is a type of brain cancer. And so I thought about, with this whole idea of hunting, right? You have a woman hunting, and that woman now is the predator. And so what is her prey? Yes, there's an animal, but her prey is she's trying to come to terms with things that she has in her past. And then I started looking at, we have wild spaces within each of us. We have these places that we can't tame. For some, maybe it's the love for someone has for somebody else, and that love drives them to do things. For another, maybe it's an addiction they have. For Amy Ray, she does have a type of addiction. She has been traumatized, and that really, it develops a wild space in her that she doesn't want anyone to know about. And maybe to some extent, she doesn't really want to give it up, but she wants to live a healthy life. So you've got two counterpoints there that are really struggling with each other.
Mm-hmm. And she has a husband who really loves her and a family.
Right.
So that's in juxtaposition to her own sort of secret life that is not connected to them.
Exactly.
And you mentioned, just maybe it relates to what you just said, but you mentioned earlier that the wilderness is such a metaphor for the interior life. Is that what you said?
Exactly.
Can you talk a little bit more about that, what you mean by that?
Yeah, I remember one night I was hiking up on a ridge, the sun was setting, and I was looking over the contours of the land, and I thought to myself, that looks like the body of God. You know, I was looking at these crevasses and these, you know, beautiful sloping hills and then the peaks. And I just thought, how gorgeous. But then I thought about the emotional highs and lows that we go through, or these moments in our lives. I call them little altars because they're turning points in our lives. I imagined the life and the terrain externally that we see can oftentimes be a metaphor for the emotional journeys we've been on. You know, there are those valleys, there are those mountains we've had to climb that are so steep. There are those areas where it's like the desert, and, you know, it's just very dry and desolate and lonely. And then there's other times we may have a part of our life that feels very verdant. And this landscape where I lived, it had all of these things, mm-hmm. right? It's an amazing, amazing part of geography where all of these type of landforms come together.
And maybe we could talk a little bit also about Prue, who works for the Bureau of Land Management and becomes involved in this search for Amy Ray. It's great that the novel is about these two strong women. I mean, they are the book, you know. But she's different in some ways, even though she has connection to her. What is she like?
Yeah, you know, Prue is more of a cause and effect person. She's not this complicated woman who needs to mine, you know, her internal world. She loved and she lost, and I identified with that very much, having lost my second husband. I also had lost a love of my life who was a forester. He was in my life for 2 years. So I really could identify and capture with that grief and how difficult it is to love again. So for Prue, she's guarded too, in that she's loved and her allegiance is still to her love who has passed. But she really is just, we have a problem. You know, we're going to solve it. There's a missing woman. I'm going to find her. I don't care if everyone gives up. I'm not going to. I have a son. I'm going to take care of him. I'm going to work hard. You know, she does the task that's in front of her. And I really love that about her. Mm-hmm. It really resonated with me. I think sometimes we build our lives by doing that very next thing in front of us, whether we're grieving, whether we're sad. There's a muscularity to Prue that I hope will strengthen my readers.
Yeah, she's a problem solver.
She is, very much so.
I wanted to get into how your own background prepared you for writing this novel. We mentioned some of the areas before. You have some background in archaeology. How did that work into this novel?
Sure. So, you know, when I moved to this part of Colorado, I fell so in love with the land and just the people that I wanted to know more. And I met an area archaeologist. I was actually had read in the paper about some work they had done. So I went and met him, and we developed a strong friendship, and he introduced me to other areas of the land and sites. And then he invited me on field schools and took me with him to survey sites. And he really started training me on how to do this archaeological work. And it's a fascinating area because there's over 300 archaeological sites in the area, probably more. And a lot of those sites are based on the Fremonts, who are a Native American tribe that literally vanished. They were flourishing in Utah at one point back in, I guess it was 1000 AD. And then by 1400 AD, there were some just really remote, isolated cliff dwellings, some of them that were appearing in western Colorado. And then there was nothing. And this one site that we were excavating where the book does take place, there literally are specific scenes that take place at the spot. It literally was if a family was there roasting their dinner, sitting around their dwelling, and the roof collapsed on them is what it felt like. Though there were no remains of any bodies found, everything else was intact. It was incredible. And yet, none of the cultural artifacts of this culture were ever assimilated into any other cultures. So that again spoke to me. You know, we have a way of life for Amy Ray. We have a character who vanishes, right? And whether or not she is to be found, I'll leave that up to the reader. But still, even if she's found, there's a big part of her life that just vanishes.
Interesting to think about that in general, about disappearance in the world and what it means for people surrounding someone.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I just recently visited Meeker, Colorado on the book tour, and, you know, I raised my sons there, and this place was home. And even though there are still friends there, there was this surreal feeling. You know, I drove by my old homes or old places where we'd been. Life goes on, and there's nothing there to say I was there. Mm-hmm. There's no remnant to say that I was there, other than I do still know some of those people there. But I did. It was almost a phantom-like experience.
I'm speaking with Diane Lebeck. You're listening to Between the Covers on KBOO Portland. This is Kathleen Stevenson. We're talking with Diane Lebeck about her new book, Breaking Wild. Now, the structure that I alluded to earlier, there are these two women's stories that are almost alternated within the book, what's happening with Amy Ray and what's happening with Prue. How did you come to that structure? Was that how you started the novel, or did that develop over time? How did the actual structuring of that novel happen?
Yeah, I started the novel before my husband was diagnosed with glioblastoma, and at that time, I really just had Prue's point of view, and I wrote it in first person because I could identify with her. She felt the closest to who I am, or maybe who I want to be or envision myself to be. I got to live through her. Amy Ray didn't come to me until after my husband had passed away. And I remember him saying before he died, you have to get back to your writing. But I felt like I'd really been stalled on the manuscript. I just knew there was a piece missing. The novel is dedicated to the town of Meeker, but it is also dedicated to Carol Huck Smith, who is she was a literary legend. She's passed on. She was my literary mentor. And I remember her telling me, you only get an agent in editor's eyes once. So I decided, you know, I'm not sending this book out till I know it's right and it's ready and I know what it's going to be about. And I didn't know. So there was no rush. You know, I wrote other things. I wrote short pieces, short stories, essays. It had to come to me. I don't think we can force those things. And after Sean passed, you know, and I went through the grieving stage and I'd settled his estate and sold his logging business and done quite a number of things, I started really thinking about him and wanting to understand him in a more intimate way. And I thought about, well, maybe a process for doing that would be to give Amy Ray demons and internal conflicts that she needs to overcome. And that's really what drove it. And so it became a compulsion then for me. And it really felt like it wrote itself. And I became more captivated with her, much more so than Prue, because Prue felt familiar. Amy Ray was almost exotic to me, you know. Who is this woman? And what's going to happen to her? And yeah, so I wrote it, and it came fast. You know, it was probably, I think in 6 months' time, I got a lot of that done. But to balance that out, to not lose myself, I had to come back and ground myself with Prue. Mm-hmm. So I think in many ways, Prue grounds the story. She's that anchor we can keep coming back to. But in many ways, I needed that for myself.
Yeah, and she's kind of, for the reader, she's kind of a ray of hope that
yeah.
There will be some light at the end of the tunnel in the
exactly.
story.
Yeah, I agree with you.
There's a line on your website that's kind of intriguing. You say, I think it's you that wrote this. It says, some women are born wild, some are made. Did you write that for yourself?
I wish I had. The marketing folks came up with that. And as soon as they ran it by me, I'm going, oh my gosh, I wish I'd thought of that. I love that. And so they use that as the marketing tag for the book. But it, to me, it's perfect.
And how do you put yourself in that?
I'm identified by both of those lines, very much so. My dad's family's from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and there's a lot of hunting and fishing in that area. I used to kind of joke and say that the town was so small they had to go to the next town over to find a bride, to find a spouse. So, you know, from a little girl, I'd wake up before my parents and, you know, go get the night crawlers and go down to the dock. And my brother and I would take rowboats out in the water. And we were tiny little things. You know, 4 years old, I'd be out there fishing and walking in the woods. And when I got old enough to steer a three-wheeler, now there's four-wheelers, my uncle would park the three-wheeler outside of my grandmother's house. And I would, you know, take it off into the woods and explore. And so I think my family has said, you definitely got the genes from that side of the family. There's some Native American blood on that side of the family as well. And that really resonates with me. I identify a lot with animals, and I think there's a very strong spiritual thread to me. So that part I was born with. And it's weird because I'll get around my family, some of my other family members are my brothers, and I'm going, are we related? Because they are very urban. You know, they're not urban, but, you know, suburban, I guess I should say. They're suburbanites. They have, you know, very strong families, and they're settled, and I'm the one out in the wilderness. But the other part, I think life definitely molds us as well. Sometimes we're just made wild. Sometimes we make choices, and those choices lead us to some pretty vast spaces where we have to find our way out. And those places can feel pretty wild. And I've certainly had my share of emotional wilderness places to find my way out of. And for me, ways to do that meant developing skills. So I wanted to feel stronger. I wanted to be able to hunt by myself. I wanted to be able to fish by myself and be more capable and take care of my sons and expose them to all kinds of skills and things that they may need one day, different experiences. So yes, I think it's both. I think a lot of women can identify with that.
It's interesting. You mentioned that there's a lot about animals in the book, and that was my feeling. There's a feeling of closeness to animals. There's Prue with her loyal search and rescue dog, Kona, is that how you say it?
Yeah.
And Amy has this love for wild horses. And then there are all the animals in the wilderness, bears, deer, cougars, elk, that both women end up being connected to in some way, and in some cases for basic survival. And I don't know if I imagined this, but I remember there was a line, I thought there was a line, I couldn't find it when I went back, in which Amy Ray was maybe thinking of a cougar in terms of sisterhood. Was that right?
Oh, I'm so glad you caught it. You're the only one who has so far. Because that's actually a really important part for me in the book. You know, Amy Ray basically feels her life is in jeopardy because of this cougar who is who's coming pretty close to her numerous times. And there's no reason we can't assume that this cougar isn't stalking her, right? And so, you know, she feels like her life is at risk with this cougar. And he certainly, she's wanting to protect whatever sustenance she has found so that she can live protected from the cougar taking that. And so she has a lot of close encounters. And then there's a moment toward the end of the book where she looks up and she sees the cougar, and there she sees its shadow, and she sees two smaller shadows next to it. So she knows then it was a mother cougar with two kittens, and she is a mother with two children. And there is a very big spiritual moment there where she understands, and I think this is implied, so the reader would have to read very carefully to get it, which it means a lot to me that you did. But there's a real spiritual connection there. This cougar wasn't taking her life. This cougar was giving her life. And she can look back and think of all the close encounters, but she found a lion cache. She found food that this cougar killed. In many ways, the cougar wasn't just providing for the children, but the cougar was providing for her.
Yeah.
And that taps into the spirituality of that area, that landscape, that I really wanted to draw into the book, you know, pull out and draw into the book.
And I think you do it in a way that makes it feel natural. It doesn't feel superimposed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really got to be inferred. So thank you.
Yeah. And I think I told you this before we started the interview, but as I mentioned earlier, the book has this feeling of like almost a thriller or a mystery to the reader. And, you know, at the end of it, I was spent and I just sort of released this emotion with tears, and just it was kind of surprising. So it was almost like watching a movie that had this plot of what's going to happen. And I figure that was your intent. I figure you really want that kind of experience for a reader. Is that, am I right about that, or how do you feel about that?
I think it's just the way I write. You know, for me to write, I have to really get immersed into the story so that I am removed from my own reality around me, right? I become those characters. I become that setting. And if you're in that setting, you know, there's an energy then, and it's moving me, and I'm writing with that same kind of momentum. It's interesting you said that, because I've had a number of people just since starting the tour who got the book, and they've since reached out to me and said, I finished your book this morning. It's the first time I've stayed up all night and read a book in a long time. And they're saying the same thing. They're exhausted. You know, I couldn't put it down. But it's not the typical thriller with all, you know, there's not this huge complicated plot, but there is an emotional energy or urgency, a momentum, right? And I think that's what I felt writing it. And I think that that has been transferred over to the writing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to the
mm-hmm.
story.
Mm-hmm. You really become involved in what is going to happen to Amy Ray, particularly what is going to happen to her. And it made me wonder, do you think that there's any kind of interest from the movie world in this book?
I've already had people saying, oh, I can see this as a movie. I could just visualize everything. And I'm like, I could too when I was writing a movie, because that's the only way I can write. So, and like, I also, when I do my research, I walk every step of my characters. I walked every step that Amy Ray took,
okay.
Every step Prue took. I walked through a house that I wanted to be Prue's house. You know, I need to feel it. And I hope that then comes through in the writing. My agent did say, she said, well, you know, we have had some producers who are now inquiring about the book based upon reviews. So with the book just having been launched this past Tuesday, you know, I'm hopeful. I mean, who wouldn't be? I am totally hopeful, because I would love to see it in film. Mm-hmm. You know, I would love to watch what I've already envisioned in my head.
Are there people who inspired this work? I mean, writers that inspired this work?
Oh, I love that you've asked that. You're the first person who's asked me that. Yeah, you know, one of them is actually a fellow when I was directing the Master of Fine Arts program, I was in the position of getting to hire a lot of our faculty. And I brought on a writer whose stories I just absolutely fell in love with. Her name is Lydia Peel, P-E-E-L-E. And so her voice really spoke to me, and she is now one of our faculty members. Maylee Malloy has a number of collection of short stories out that really inspired me as well. Plain Song, I loved. So the writing I gravitate toward is spare writing that is very visual, but that's very laconic. So uses as few words as possible to paint the picture. I don't want a lot of extra words. Mm-hmm. I want a lot of clarity. And I look for that when I'm reading as well. And so I think that's the way I hope that I come across in my writing.
Well, we're almost at the end of this interview. Is there anything that you think's important to say that might inform people that I've missed here that you think that you'd like to let people know?
Oh, gosh, Kathleen, you're a really, I think, intuitive reader, and it's just, I enjoyed talking with you before the interview, and I've really enjoyed your questions as well. It gets me thinking. You know, I just really encourage readers that I think, yes, you can get caught up in, it's a survival story, it's a thriller, it's suspenseful, there's certainly a lot of page-turning energy to it, but I just also encourage them to look for the emotional story and the metaphors that are there. You know, there's even a lot of metaphors there with the whole hunting and the sacrifice of the animal. And, you know, Amy Ray, and I think all of us at some point, we need to look at what sacrifices should we or do we need to make, and within a healthy context, right? But she needs to come to her knees. She needs to be broken. And that's really where the title came from, with Breaking Wild. She needs to be broken. And some ways we say, you know, don't break someone's spirit. Don't, you know, breaking is seen as a negative connotation, but it doesn't have to be. There are some areas of our life that I think can be broken, and we can evolve from that a much stronger and a much more beautiful person.
So you mean that in the sense of how it will help her in the rest of her life?
Exactly, and in her relationship with others.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you very much for coming into KBOO and talking about this, and it was great that I got to read Breaking Wild. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Kathleen. I really enjoyed it.
And I want to let people know again that I've been speaking with Diane Lebeck. The title of the book we've been talking about is Breaking Wild. And this is Kathleen Stevenson for Between the Covers on KBOO Portland. If you missed any of this interview or want to hear it again, it will be available on our website a little later today at kboo.fm.
This week on Religion for Life, I continue my conversation with Dr. Paul Kalmonik. We're talking about the Islamic State Organization and Al-Qaeda and strategies to defeat them.
What we require is strategic patience and really pinpoint a careful targeting of terrorist actors and disassociating them from Islam.
Find weekly podcasts on kboo.fm/religionforlife.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of The Setup, a play that takes place in Hell's Kitchen during the late 1920s. It focuses on a black boxer, an eminent champion, whose return to the ring is secretly set up for defeat. The Setup runs from February 12th through March 5th at the Shaking the Tree Theater, 823 Southeast Grant Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Happening 2016, a homegrown music forum taking place February 27th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Apano Jam Space in Portland. Happening 2016 will be an exploratory conversation about how the music scene works in Portland and how artists, professionals, and supporters shape the scene. Panelists include Simon Tam, Jenny Logan, DJ Cliff, and will be moderated by Rebecca Miller. Again, that's Happening 2016, a homegrown music forum taking place February 27th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Apano Jam Space, 8114 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Laurelhurst Theater and Pub, Portland's neighborhood theater since 1924, independently owned and operated, featuring modern, independent, and classic films, microbrews, pizza, and salads. Located at East Burnside and 28th in Portland, laurelhursttheater.com.